had the last minute opportunity to be with you this morning. And so as I was preparing for this sermon this morning, I thought I would go into the pastor's office and find the most spiritual person's Bible that I could. So I dug around until Eric Allen Howell's original Bible with hearts and underlinings in it was found. So pretty sure it's going to be killer because of that. In thinking about Trinity Sunday, what it means that we are here together, that we are having the opportunity this morning and in our relationships and in our families to mirror the three in one. This crazy idea that there is one God, that we are following in our heritage of a monotheistic idea, even though it may seem to others as different. And we're probably beyond the explanations of the egg, which apparently has a shell and a yolk and whatever the white stuff is, right? Or the water, which can be gas, liquid, and solid. Because there is something so other about our God that it would make sense that even in our understanding of the Father, Son, and Spirit, that maybe it's a little beyond what we are able to understand. And yet with everything in our faith and our heritage, we have the opportunity to appropriately look at that. We're not asked to just follow things in blind faith, but there are things we can know. But at the end of the day, all of this that we celebrate and the reason we worship is not because of our ability to analyze, but because of our ability to enjoy. It is not about analyzing food. It's about eating it. It's not about analyzing all of our relationships. It's about living in what is. And that's always been the invitation from a God who is both transcendent and immanent. I know that most people love a good story, but I am not one of those people, naturally. Whenever we go to the library and someone says, "Have you read this?" I say, "Is it fiction?" Then no, save your time. Brett really enjoys poetry, and I ask him just to not share that with me when it's poetry reading time. Unless it's something a kid has written, and then obviously that's my favorite thing in the world. But save your flowery language, just give me some facts. That's what I want. And I grew up believing that the instructional parts of the Bible were the most important thing. That I didn't really have time for story unless I could break it down into some bullet points. Instead, just tell me what kind of insects I can eat. I mean, the ones that walk on the land but have wings, or the ones that just have wings. These are things you all discuss at home, I understand. Just been reading your journal, that's the truth. But as I grew in my understanding of the Bible, I learned that the primary way in which we learn about God is through story. And this is not just a Jewish preferred genre. It turns out to be the way that we neurologically process information, form memory, the way we best learn. And perhaps it's because our lives are not collections of facts. Our lives are not bullet pointed, these strictly linear movements. When I talk about your birthday, I don't stand there and read your birth certificate. Well, Susan was born weighing 8 pounds, 6 ounces. She was about 19 inches. There was some yelling. That's all we remember. We tell story. Who was there? Do you remember that Dad was eating chips and salsa and Mom threw up? We tell a story. It's not this linear move. We're not trying to connect concepts that all start with the letter P. Instead, our lives are much like the journey of the Israelites when God brought them out of slavery in Egypt and gave these people connection and life through God's self. Our stories are that same roundabout way. Our stories are a journey and often an unpredictable one. There are ups and downs and twists and turns, some of our own volition and others that happen without our permission. So I've learned to like a good story. I especially like a good story that starts with "in the beginning." With any start to a story, the options are limitless. There's this infinite possibility. There's a clean slate, a new thing that hasn't happened yet. And that's how I feel about each morning after a couple cup of coffee. That this day has never been lived by you in this time, at this place, with these people, with your giftedness and your insight and your experience. The possibilities are infinite. So I love the story in the beginning, but especially in the beginning, God. And even better, in the beginning, God created. The earth was formless and void, and the darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was present and already active and moving over the surface of the waters. The possibilities were limitless. But what I don't always like about stories is the ending. Whether it's a good movie or a wonderful day or a job or a relationship, the ending does not always bring about some kind of peaceful resolve or the good feelings that I always chase. Sometimes the endings are really painful. There's transitions with children, with marriages, with communities, jobs, relationships, things that are often born out of pain or frustration or despair. And even when endings are a part of a healthy and natural journey, it can still bring some heartache and longing. When Jesus tells the disciples in John 16 that he is leaving but coming back, we sort of have the cheat, observance, and Cliff's Notes of this situation. We know that life exist after this ending. We know that it's really not an ending, but will continue, and this work of God against the train wreck of humanity will keep moving powerfully and transformatively, affecting all who live. But the disciples were confused by this predicted ending. The promise of the Spirit probably didn't bring the immediate comfort that they felt that they needed in the moment. Endings can be really, really hard. Endings remind us of our powerlessness, that we don't actually have the resources that we need to manage our own lives. The Israelites had to learn, whether in the face of hunger or war, that they were dependent on a God who was for them, but also a God who was present. And so there are times when these endings, we feel, produce a desperation for God. But that desperation, our need for God, was always there. What endings do is reveal the reality of our need for God. But we hate endings, so no wonder we work so diligently to maintain what we have. We work to hold on to relationships or our dreams and goals or our jobs or plans in some kind of desperate, tight-fisted attempt to control. But this attempted control goes against the reality of a moving story with twists and turns and ups and downs, some predictable, some surprising. So perhaps in order for us to fully appreciate the in the beginning moments, we must recognize what that actually entails. In the beginning was an end. The end, possibly, of what's familiar, the end of what is known, the end of what I've relied upon, the end of what I've been convinced I need for survival, the end of life as I have known it. But this ending can also bring a deep sigh of relief, the end of the pain and isolation, the end of lonely addiction, the end of suffering, the end of being a victim and being stuck in the past, the end of abuse and violence and injustice. Whether or not the ending brings tense resistance or willing sighs of relief, there is an indisputable truth here. In order to have an in the beginning, there needs to be a the end. In John 16, Jesus was telling the disciples both a the end and in the beginning. So here are the Cliff Notes, he says to the disciples. I'm gone. I'll be back. The Spirit of God will guide you. Peace. I'm going to God, and I know that sorrow has filled your heart, but here's the truth. You're welcome. sure they're thinking, Jesus, don't tell me how to live my life at this point. If I go away, he says, the helper will come. There is much to experience. There are things that you are not ready to hear because you haven't lived those days yet. But the Spirit, the very voice and presence of God, will guide and comfort and show you the heart of God. I don't like it when anyone tells me, this thing you don't want to happen is happening, but it's for your own good. It's better for you if I leave. Don't use that phrase with me, Jesus. But we love the familiar. And there's something about the unknown that even if it offers some kind of hope, that it's still scary, unexperienced. Our imagination doesn't go to the amazing possibilities, but to the worst case scenarios. But what Jesus and what we have already seen in the redemptive work of God is that the reality of God is not the avoidance of bad circumstances. The reality of God is the presence of God in the midst of everything. So what the disciples have already seen enough of is that things that are difficult still happen. We lose, we fail, we get knocked down, we knock other people down. And yet, the reality of God means that the abuse, the violence, the injustice, the horrible things we have experienced, our own failures, not that those are avoided, but that those things do not have the last word. Because of the reality of new beginnings. The Spirit is no ordinary helper. The Spirit knows the heart of God and offers this guidance and comfort because the Spirit is the person of God. And so Jesus' words, his death, resurrection, all these events of Pentecost, this was not the Spirit's introduction to the world, because in the beginning, the Spirit was moving. The same Spirit that hovered above the chaotic waters is still present and now speaking the mind, the heart, and the life, guiding us into what it means to interact both with God and others. This is not a last-minute understudy because Jesus needs to be somewhere else. This is the breath of God. And the more the person of God is revealed through Jesus, through the Spirit, the more we see that pervasive and persistent presence of God, that this is not just a doctrine, but an assured, continued offering of the nearness of God. The word Spirit in Latin is wind or breath, and this concept finds its origins in the Hebrew creation story. In the beginning, the Spirit of God, this Ruach, this breath hovering above the waters, aware of the chaos and yet unthreatened. Waters moving with turmoil, yet the Spirit moves with power. The very breath of God, invisible, uncontainable, and powerful. And the Spirit of God has always been present in the midst of chaos, is always able to speak order and life in the midst of turmoil. Jesus' talk on the Spirit is the invitation to the already active Spirit, breathing life and creating new every day. Breath is simple and yet pretty complex. Breath is involuntary, yet when we draw our attention to breath, such an amazing opportunity can happen for awareness and insight and healing. Breath is also how we measure life. When you enter into this world, we say, you drew your first breath. And when you leave this world, we say, and you breathed your last. It may be a time marker and a quantifier, but it's also the way in which we describe life and have for millennia. So it is with the Spirit. To be spiritual is to be animated. That this is not about morality. This is not necessarily about all the dogmatic things I used to hold on to. This is an invitation to be fully alive. The Spirit of God has been given to us, is present, and reminds me that the presence of God is as intimate and close as my own inhale and exhale. This breath reminds me that my connection with God is not grounded in my or your strenuous efforts. We're not connected to God just through scheduled prayer or intense Bible study or moments of compassion. We're also not distant from God in our distraction or self-absorption or fears. Instead, we're always breathing. We didn't initiate the breath. It's both involuntary and something I can pay attention to, but I'm breathing whether I really want to or not. And I belong to God, whether I want to or not. The Spirit has come because that's what the Spirit does. The Spirit has come because that is who God is. The Spirit will guide, the Spirit will teach, the Spirit will comfort. I'm breathing whether or not I want to, and I belong whether or not I'm conscious of it. I don't earn spiritual favor through my attention to connection with God. However, when we draw our attention to breath, to that life within us, to that new place, our heart, mind, soul, God with us, Emmanuel, communicates in such a way that we are aware of our emotions and our mind and our fears and our longings and our insecurities. In the same way, drawing attention to the Spirit of God makes us co-conspirators with God in this mysterious and miraculous, limitless way in which God is working and healing and redeeming every single day around us. At an AA group where I attend most of my meetings, at the end we hold hands and we pray the Lord's Prayer, and then we say, "It works if you work it." But my friend who is a therapist with me and also has 34 years of sobriety always says, "It works if you work it," and then she says, "And when you don't." It's involuntary, and yet we draw attention to it. We work, we pay attention, we join in partnership with this God. And yet, we are not the one who initiate and ultimately sustain. This is the Spirit's work, that we are both held when we can't hold on, that we are enlivened when we feel like quitting, that we are drawn into God's work more deeply when we pay attention to the Spirit that is. God breathed this ruach into these lumps of clay and humanity lived. God breathed and spoke and fulfilled promises to Abraham. God moved with the Israelites every second of their wilderness journey as their guide and provider and protector. God dwelt among humanity in the Ark, the Covenant, the Temple, and then with them in the prophets in the exile. And then God became human and dwelt among us. And now God is as close as our breath. There has never been a moment where the nearness of God is not accessible, real, and willing. God does not need a temple, a land, a place, or visibility in the way we expected. The Spirit of God is present. And one way that we know that is in our connection with one another, that we are neurobiologically created for connection. This is not a personal preference. Are you an introvert or an extrovert? This is how we were made, that there are certain processes in our brain that actually wake up, that bring about new neurotransmitters once we connect with other people. Things that lay dormant in our brain that come alive when we are together. And if we really are powerless and don't have all the resources we need outside of a connection with God, then that connection with God is all we need to live in unity. When I am at a Texas Rangers game, I get really serious about it. When they lost the World Series, I had to take Tylenol PM for 2 weeks, as you all did as well. But what I noticed is at one of the World Series games, I am sitting and all of a sudden we get a home run and I high-five someone I don't know. And there's the lady with the monkey puppet who knows what's going on there. And there's the drunk guy that keeps yelling obscenities at the umpire. And yet all of a sudden, whenever there's this scoring, I think they call it, then I'm hugging a person that I don't know. And so normally I have these boundaries. Okay, well, what are your beliefs about this? But there was no time for discussion about politics or, you know, doctrine at that point. Instead, we're on the same team going to this together. And that comes from this unity. And we, how much more do we have in common with the Spirit of God that we already have all we need to be connected? And so one of the messages that Jesus shares as he is leaving, in the way the disciples understood him, is that you're not alone. Brett and I have realized there are so many things we cannot control in our kids' world, which is everything, by the way. We can't fix. There are things that have happened to them that we were not able to make better. But what we can say and do say all the time in the message of our home is, no matter what, you're not alone. So that presence that was communicated by the Spirit and also by the church community, that is what it is that holds us when the ends come. That the God who created and still creates says that you are not alone. The Spirit still speaking life. The Spirit that honors the Son and speaks the truth of Jesus by telling of God's restorative activity in the world, where blind people see and people are healed and broken people are restored, and somehow we survive. And not only that, but thrive. Those who are empty and dying find life. Families are healed. Life is springing up. And all of us are invited.